Yeah, heading down the home stretch here, getting ready for game night, bottom of the hour. The Kings and the Bulls tonight. Kevin Gleese and Kyle Draper, nice enough to join us. He's had two tours with the Kings. Can't do justice to his vast resume in a short time here, but of course, two-time champion with the Bulls, and he is now an outstanding Bulls analyst. Bill Winnington with us. Thank you, Bill, for your time. How are you?
I am doing surprisingly well, considering where the Bulls are, but other than that, it's good.
Three-time champ, right?
Yeah.
The
second three, yes.
Yeah, where are those rings at right now?
In the safety deposit box at the bank.
Still got them, though. Still got them.
Oh, yeah, still got them. Okay. Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go. They don't go out much.
Let me ask you, Bill. So Whitey just said two tours of duty in Sacramento.
Yes.
We'll get into the first one in a minute. But you ended your career in Sacramento.
Yes.
There too, right?
Yep.
What was that like coming back? Like I said, you were 24-5-47, I think, or something in your first tour. What was it like ending your career in Sacramento, especially after having won three championships?
And you joined a team that's kind of on the upswing.
Yeah.
Right?
It was good. It was my boy Scott Pollard just had a heart transplant,
yes,
by the way. So Scott's doing well. But it was probably one of his best years of his career here. And I was brought in as like the third center behind Vlade and Scott to play. And I ended up playing in only seven games. So I ended up being more of a mentor to some of the younger guys, and, you know, tried to help Jason Williams a little bit with, you know, staying focused with what's on the floor and not get distracted by the outside stuff, but also to understand what the outside stuff is, how he could actually make a lot of money if he played it right. But it was a great team. Rick Adelman was a coach. A lot of fun to play for Rick. Rick was phenomenal. And that team was just a lot of fun. I mean, obviously with Vlade and Chris Webber, a lot of things, good times happened. So it was
great
fun.
Passing team, right? That's one reason so much fun to watch and to play on.
It was. You know, there were really not a whole lot of sets. It was, Rick just said, you know, bring the ball up the floor, spread the floor, have proper spacing, and kind of just go.
Wow.
And they just moved the ball.
Play basketball.
Yeah,
right? Play, yeah.
And it was fun. And everyone got along. Everyone understood what they needed to do. And they worked hard and got it done. And just unfortunately, the Lakers weren't away.
Yes, every year.
Every Lakers, year, right? Yeah. Every year, yeah.
It happens. Yeah. You know, it's like for the Bulls in the beginning, it was Detroit. Then for New York and Utah, it was the Bulls.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Bill. Last year, the Kings had such a great year. And this year, expectations were high, and it reminds me of that team that you played on. I know you weren't on the 99 Kings, the lockout year. They won 27 games. They almost beat Utah, and expectations were so high for that year you came back. There was a lot of talk before the season of, they're going to win 50. Well, they didn't, but it just takes time, obviously, doesn't it? I think you guys won 44 that year.
Yeah, and it's everything really has to go right. Everyone's got to play well. You can't have any injuries. You can't really have that many bad games. And if you have a bad game, one guy can have a bad game. You can't have two guys have a bad game. And there's really so much more involved. And I get into arguments a lot of times with guys about basketball. It's not just talent. A lot of teams have talent. Every player in the NBA, 1 through now 18, has a college guy. The whole team was a college star. Right. And play. Now, they may not play much in the NBA. They may not get off the bench. They may be a two-way player. But in college, they could play. So on a given night, if they get it, we got a guy, Bittman, Unlock Bittman.
Yes,
he's come in now last couple of games and been huge because we have so many injuries. He's playing really well, shooting the ball well. His hustle on defense has been fantastic, playing well. So it just has to work out. And you get a couple of guys that have a bad night at the same time, and you lose a game that maybe you're not supposed to lose. And those end up, in the long run, they hurt you because maybe you're not in the right position for the playoffs and your matchups are different now. And it just goofy. I mean, like we played the Lakers that year. It was in the first round.
Yes.
And
yeah.
It was like, you know, had we not played the Lakers in the first round, maybe we meet them in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, game four of that series, which was not here but in Sacramento, a lot of Kings players, and I was at that game, say that was about the loudest it's ever, ever been in that building.
The old Arco?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
It was. Say what you want. Everyone say what you want about Arco Arena. And I know Phil Jackson had some.
You're right.
Some words. And I heard Chuck talk. I love Sacramento. I think it's great. And actually, I was fortunate enough on my tours to play in both Arco arenas. The first,
the first time
I played in the first Arco arena that was maybe a little bit bigger than the court is down there now. And then obviously the other Arco, the newer Arco, which is now the old Arco. So it was loud. I mean, the fans in Sacramento are phenomenal. They really get behind the team and get loud. And it's just unfortunate with as great a team as that was. And I had high expectations, too. And that's part of the problem why maybe it's so disappointing is because expectations were higher.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it didn't work out. And the Lakers just had our number that year. And, you know, Shaq and Kobe.
It was a pretty good team.
Yeah.
pretty solid. Bill Winnington joining us, former Sacramento King, three-time champ with the Bulls. Let's go back to your first year in Sacramento. Do you remember that year? And I know it was only 1 year, 25-57 the record. Kevin, you were right, 101-59, a loss at Charlotte that season. Like, take me back then, because I'll be honest with you, Bill. I'm from Philadelphia. So L-Train.
That's your problem.
Lionel Simmons was my guy growing up. Like, we idolized L-Train. And so Dwayne Caswell. Temple guy.
Yep.
And so we kept an eye on what was going on here. Tell me about that year.
Lionel Simmons, first of all, a phenomenal player. Yeah. I love him. Rookie coming into the league and was playing like a vet right away. Uh-huh. Got an opportunity to play, and he's playing for Dick Motta, who doesn't like rookies.
That's what you guys had four rookies, right? Wasn't it? Yeah, Caswell
Dwayne,
and Bonner.
Lionel, and Travis Mays, and Caswell. Mays, Bonner, Caswell. And Ricky, no, he wasn't a rookie.
Rick Callaway,
Was it Ricky? Was it Callaway? He wasn't a rookie, though.
He wasn't a rookie.
We had four rookies that played a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't start off that way. And I got traded. They brought me in. Dick Motta wanted me in because he wanted me to help the guys understand the offense.
He had coached you in Dallas, right?
He had coached me in Dallas for 3 years. And I know, and Dick is old school. He's hardline. It's his way or the highway. And you got to run his stuff. And he didn't take a whole lot of anything.
His
way or the highway.
Yeah.
But off the court, fun coach, fun to be around, great guy. You can go hang out with him. You're going to have a lot of fun. But on the court, it's his way. And so he trades for me. He also traded for Eric Lechner to get Eric Lechner to come in. I don't remember where, out of Wyoming, but I don't remember who he traded with. Maybe Utah.
I was going to say Utah.
Maybe it was Utah. But so he brought Eric in, and Eric was younger than me. I was 29 at the time. No, I wasn't. I was 27.
You were 27.
Yeah, I was 27 at the time. I'd played 5 years in Dallas, so I was 27. And Eric was young, like a second or third year player. I'd been around 5 years. And Dick kind of knew what I was, but I ended up starting the season. And we had Ralph Sampson, Dwayne, and Ralph never played. Dwayne wasn't playing much at first, and Eric just kind of just didn't click here with him.
Right.
And he and Dick had it odd, so I was starting for a while. Then we weren't doing well, and I remember we were in Houston. And Antoine Carr and I got into it in practice. And
big dog, right?
Big dog.
Yeah.
It's the only. I've been in a few scuffles throughout my NBA career, and that was the only time I realized. Well, I was thinking to myself, what have I got? Like, why? And it was scary for a minute. But it was over. But then after that or that game, Dick Motta decided, you know what? We're not winning, so I'm going to play the young guys because they're going to be here next year, and we want to see what's going on. So now I no longer started. I started coming off the bench, and I still played, but you know,
right. You were 1-for-5 beyond the arc last year. You were kind of the original stretch five.
I did go 1-for-5, and I realized after that year, I don't remember if I made my first one or what, but again. I didn't get – back then, we didn't run plays for me to get three.
Right.
The shot clock's running down, and I'm standing out there picking my nose, like just wasting time because we're doing an isolation, and all of a sudden the ball flies out and hits me, and I look at the shot clock, and there's a second. It's like, oh.
What am I going to do with this? Yeah.
So if you look at my career, I have 2 years that where I shot 100% from behind a three-point line.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
1-for-1.
Nice.
I made darn sure every time I got the ball after that one, my foot was on the line.
Right.
You know how guys now are looking down and moving their feet back? I was looking down and moved my foot forward. And I made a few more, but they weren't threes, and I don't care. I finished the year. I bust Steve Kerr's chops back in the 90s. I said, Steve, man, I'm shooting 100% from behind the three-point line. You're only shooting 45. I'm better than you.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me about playing with Mike. You know, so much has been made about The Last Dance. You got guys on a barnstorming tour out in Australia now. Set the record straight for me. What was it like, those three championship runs?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I like winning, so it was freaking fantastic. You know what? The barnstorming tour, I think, got a lot of negative publicity. I think they publicized negative. I know a guy in Australia that saw it. He said it was wonderful.
Okay.
It was positive.
Stacey King was on with us, and he said basically the same thing.
It was really a great, great outing. Now, I don't know. I didn't see it, but I trust this guy. He lives in Sydney, just outside of Sydney, and saw the show in Sydney, and he said it was really positive. It was really good. Just great stories and things that happened. And again, every story has perspective, no matter who's telling it. And who's telling it has a different perspective, whether they actually saw it or heard it, and how many times did they tell it to change it. Because, you know, that's the way it works.
Yeah, you tweaked it.
But it was Michael's perspective. Everything that was in The Last Dance happened.
It did.
Everything happened. Right. It was there. And Michael actually made no bones about it. He was hard on guys. If you weren't ready to play 100%, and not back down from anyone. He'd
call you out on it.
Oh, he would call you out in practice and make you miserable. Miserable. Mm. But you had to if you understood that and you worked on your game or whatever it was that you had to work on, it might have just been your mental attitude. You got it. And you just had to understand what he was doing. Some guys took it personally and had a hard time dealing with it. Well, I can't talk to me that way, and it is, but it's not what it is. If you understand Michael, not only did he want to be the best player, he wanted, and that wasn't even paramount. The paramount was he wanted to be on the best team. Hmm. He had to win. Hmm. And if you know Michael, everything he does, he has to win. They talk about gambles. Well, on everything, and he wants to win on everything. And if he doesn't, he's going to come back at you and keep coming and keep coming and come until he finally wins.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of players do it. I mean, if something happens, they need that motivation, especially with the better players. They really need that motivation. It's got to come because they've been competing at such a high level all the time. They need something to help them push themselves even further. So if you say something in a paper, if you do something or say something on the court, he's going to remember that and elevate his game, and he finds a way. He's got one of the highest pain thresholds I've ever seen, and the strongest minds to just will himself and push him through about anything to win and to get what he wants on the court. And so playing with that every night was phenomenal for me. And I had a little bit – I like to tell people I cheated because I played at St. John's with Chris Mullin. He was very similar. So I knew how the hell to get out of the way.
Right. Mully was similar, huh?
Mully's a gym rat, and he just understands the game and pushes himself. I found in call, I thought I worked hard, and I obviously did. But when I got to St. John's, I found out that I'm not working as hard as I thought I was. Because look at this guy. I mean, he's all American in the Hall of Fame now, and was an award winner in college. So I found myself keeping up. Like, I gotta do more. Like, Chris, like, we just had a 3-hour practice, and we went home and as freshmen, Chris and I were roommates. And Chris said, all right, see ya. I said, where are you going? I got a little bit of homework to do. He said, I'm going back to the gym. Excuse me? We just had a 3-hour practice. It's now 8:00 at night. We had dinner, and we're like, I'm going back to the gym.
That was his homework.
And I'm like, what are you gonna do? Like, and you know, we're freshmen. We're 18, 19 years old. I'm like,
All
right. So the first night I don't go. The second night he comes back, I'm going back to the gym. Okay. So he goes, and I said, you know what? Let me just go. Come on. He ain't really going to the gym. Come on.
Yeah. Let me go see.
Oh, he's in the gym and he's working. I'm like, okay. I run downstairs, get my stuff, and I go out and we start playing. Within within the first month of the season, we had like half the team going back and shooting and just scrimmaging and getting shots up because Chris was doing it. And we had good leaders, David Russell and Billy Goodwin, they were juniors at the time, but they were kind of our leaders. And they'd come back, and we ended up getting a lot of guys to go back in the gym. And Chris kind of kept that going all 4 years.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you know, you look at your best player, what he's doing, and if he's working harder than you are when he doesn't have to,
you
got to do it. Right. And Michael was the same way. So Michael's getting to practice early, staying late. He's doing every little thing, Phil's doing the yoga after practice, doing this. And if he's doing it, the best player in the world, Chris was doing it, one of the best players in college basketball, you kind of got to do it. And if you don't, you're not going to be around very long.
Bill Wennington with us here as we get ready for the Bulls and the Kings. What do you make, Bill, of the changes in the way the game is played now? We understand with analytics, it's, you know, three are in the key. Far cry from the way you played with some great teams. What do you think of the changes that we're seeing as the game evolves?
I really try not to.
Really?
It hurts. You know what, though? There's no basketball to me. Used to be a thinking man's game where you ran certain plays to run the counter after.
Right.
So you'd run low posts, get a guy going down low to set up a three-point shot. But now it's everyone's just setting up three-point shots 100% of the time.
Yeah.
100. So it's and the sad thing is everyone's running exactly the same offense
right.
unless you got Minnesota, you got two bigs, Cleveland's got two bigs. I know I'm missing another team. He's got a couple bigs, but it's rare now. So everyone's running really the same stuff where you start on the outside, you're moving the ball, pass it. And the teams, some teams pass the ball a lot and move. And other teams will have two passes, if you get that many, and a shot. But it's all to get the same type of shot. There's no – and we got – and honestly, I think our best lineup is when Drummond and Vooch play together.
Really?
I love
big,
that lineup.
Like too big.
Because Vooch is a willing passer.
Yeah.
He used to be able to shoot the three.
Right. Yeah.
and he still can. But you can't – either one of them, if you take your biggest guy and put him on the one, the other guy goes and posts up. And how do you stop
him?
Because they can both post up. And Andre Drummond just knows how to rebound. I call him – he's a 7-foot Dennis Rodman. Now, I want to say Dennis was a better all-around player and just athletically, defensively.
Yeah.
But Drum is good. He's quick. He can switch on to guards and kind of slow him down a little bit. He's got quick hands up on the top. He once every other game, he gets a steal and goes down for a dunk on the the guard five interchange.
Yeah.
You know, the screens that everyone runs
quick
up
hands,
top.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just pops it out and goes. And he's got a good little explosion. He gets down the floor pretty quick. So I like that. But that's rare.
Yeah.
And even Billy, I think, is a little hesitant because matchup-wise, it can create some issues on the at the other end.
Yep.
But I'm the guy that says, well, you match with me. And I honestly feel, and again, I'm not a coach. I'm an ex-player and have been doing this for 20 years. If you got a guy on the floor, and Phil was very good at this, you got to put the players on the floor in positions to be successful.
Yep.
And if you got Andre Drummond, there's no use having him sitting out at the three-point line.
No way.
Have him down low. Have him run screen rolls. Have him involved and to occupy a defender. So now you got to have five guys actively defending five guys. Now you can't cheat. So when you do run a screen on the outside, teams will get into a rotation, and that's the Bulls' biggest downfall now.
You guys had that play with Javon Carter where he had the open layup. He kicked it out because everybody's like, I'm just sorry to bring that up. You're giving me that look. You had to call that game, right? Like,
yes,
that was
I did. And you should have seen the reaction of the guys on the bench.
Right. Like, you're now, there.
I hate it when guys do that and there's like one defender back and not even – he's kind of out of position and you kick it out. There were no defenders back. I mean, he literally had – a layup and got to the rim and kicked it out, and then we missed the shot, lose the rebound, and it's like, I'm old school that way, and I get it. 33% from behind the 3-point line is better than 50%. Yeah. 10 shot. You take 10 shots from each. 33 is better than 50.
50, yeah.
Well, I'm gonna be honest. When you look at our games, when we shoot below 33% from behind the 3-point line, we're shooting 55% to 60% from two. Now the problem is you got to take more than 10 shots from there. Then so if you shoot 33 pointers, if you only shoot 20, you'll get some of those points back. And the way we've been playing defense and having lack of scoring sometimes, that's sometimes not enough.
Right.
But it's still We got some guys that can finish at the rim and score. We got, in my opinion, two of the best mid-range game guys in DeMar and Kobe.
Yeah.
And Zach, when he was healthy, that could score and get, you know, anything from 15 to 8 feet in the rim and be very successful or at the rim. And just unfortunate for us right now, our three-point shooting is just really struggling.
Right.
I mean, Kobe was really hot for a while. Io was unconscious for a long stretch. He was shooting like 50% over a 6 or 7 game stretch from both field goal and three-point line, and just playing terrific. But legs getting a little heavy right now.
Right.
Yeah. We got to run, unfortunately. I have to squeeze in one more. Maybe you can give a one-word answer. What word would you use to describe Domas's father? Well, because you played against Arvidas,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
He was really good, and it's a shame he got to the NBA so late because he was actually way better.
Uh-huh.
I was supposed to play him when we were 18, and he was on a Russian team, and we were over in Romania, I think. But he hit his head on the rim and had to get 13 stitches across his head. And we're looking at so the consolation was we had to play Dachenko, who was like 7'5".
Wow.
And just a big guy that beat the crap out of us.
Yeah.
But he was just such an athlete. He was, he's all of 7 feet and more and just so athletic, like his son is now.
Yeah.
But I even think even more athletic than he was. But
thank you. Yeah, very much.
We got to run, Bill.
All right. Appreciate it very
much. Appreciate it. Have a great call, man.
All right.
All right. Good luck
tonight.
That's
going to do it for the drive, guys. Stick around. Game night is next from the Gold One Center on Sactown Sports.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.